Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This is Hemant.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show. Get your bonus episodes. Get your ad-free episodes. Mm-hmm. And we're recording this a little early because you're going somewhere this Saturday.
Well, I'm going somewhere in
and
3 hours.
That too.
So remember when we talked about how we really appreciate that we get paid for this and that's why we can prioritize this?
Yes.
I am frantic right now because I need to be packing. So let's slam jam through this. I
gotcha.
Am leaving in, it's 12:45. We're leaving at 4:45 p.m. For ultimately to Fargo, North Dakota, because my husband and I are trying to visit all 50 states. I almost said 60 states. All 50 states. So we're driving up to Eau Claire, Wisconsin tonight and then going over to Fargo by way of Duluth, Minnesota. It's
going
to be a very pretty
animals.
Drive. I know, we're nuts. But on our way back, we are going to be spending Saturday night. This coming Saturday would be what, the 2nd, 3rd, 4th?
Something like that.
Oop, 6th. No, oop.
Not third. Even close.
Not even close. 3rd. We are going, my husband, my dog, and I are going to be at Unleashed Hops and Hounds in Minneapolis. It is a dog park slash bar situation. You do need reservations to get in. So you have to do that on their website. If you're bringing a dog, you need to like do some stuff. So if that's your plan, do that. And if you're coming, please let us know either on Facebook or email us, friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com, just so I kind of roughly know how many people to expect. I'm looking forward to it. I really love hanging out with you guys.
Very cool.
Okay.
And while we're talking about stuff we are going to, I will be in Des Moines, Iowa.
Excuse me, you made fun of me for driving to Eau Claire, Wisconsin?
You set that up for me.
I'll be
at the Iowa Secular Summit on Saturday, June 10th. And if you Google Iowa Secular Summit, you can buy your tickets, and hopefully I'll see you there if you're in the area.
Where in Iowa did you say?
Des Moines.
Never been to Des Moines. I've been to most of Iowa. Well, I've been to Iowa City and Dubuque. That was the biggest lie I've ever told. Why would I just lie about being into a lot
That's what this podcast is all
it's
about.
It's just me lying and then correcting myself immediately.
There we go.
It's such a weird instinct.
So let's start with this story
today. My brain
today.
Isn't functioning well. This is going to be a mess.
It's okay. Just listen.
Great.
You're all good.
Just listen, he says.
The Washington Post had a story this week that the second it was out, I think it was the most read thing on their website, like by a mile, and I saw it getting shared everywhere. And basically, it's by this reporter, Peter Jameson, who is doing a series, I think, on homeschooling because it's been on the rise in the country, partly because of the pandemic, partly because conservative Christians especially have just been on a tear of trashing public schools and trying to push people toward homeschooling. But the people he covered in this case, in this particular story, were conservative Christians who are about as pro-homeschooling their entire life as you can imagine, and they recently made the decision to escape that and send their kids to public school. And his article was about why are they doing this? What made them think, you know what, maybe homeschooling is not a good idea for our kids?
Sure. Can I just clarify quickly? So this is a group of people who all homeschool Christian, like...
There are a bunch of Christians, but these are just two people.
Just one homeschool. So it wasn't a religious motivation. Okay, so I'm assuming, if I had to wager a guess, and based on the experience I just had with my friends who were homeschooled, I assume they could only find really religious or conservative learning materials in like homeschooled programs, and so they didn't want that?
Wrong.
Oh.
Good try.
Socialization?
Not even close. So, the people in question are...
Because they hate teaching kids? Because teaching is terrible?
Not even close. So, the people are Christina and Aaron Beal. Basically, these are two people who are... Nope, you don't know them. Christina and Aaron Beal, they're both products of conservative Christian homeschooling. Yes, so irrelevant.
I thought they were a queer couple.
They're not.
Listen, I'm trying to get all of the information so I can judge it appropriately.
I will give you all the information here. So, Christina and Aaron Beal, wife and husband here... They're both products of Christian homeschooling. Christina graduated, she was homeschooled. She went to Patrick Henry College, which is a very well-known conservative Christian school that ends up sending a lot of people to Capitol Hill to do internships for Republicans.
Where is that university?
I think Virginia. I could be wrong about that. But she went to this school. Patrick Henry College is founded by a guy named Michael Ferris, whose other side gig is co-founding a group called the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. So this guy that runs Patrick Henry College is also the king of homeschooling for the Christian community.
And thereby putting in a lot of people to Capitol Hill.
And
so it's
also
a pretty,
doing that.
Seems
yeah.
like a pretty strong funnel.
So you get the idea, conservative Christian environment. Her husband, Aaron, is a, quote, self-taught web developer who was also homeschooled when he was growing up. And the reason he met Christina in the first place is because their families belong to the same religious circles. Okay. And in fact, their religious communities were really led by a guy named Gary Cox, who was another homeschooling advocate. So this is all they grew up with.
Okay.
They know Christian homeschooling, not just because they participated in it, but because the people who led the stuff they did weren't just random Christians. These are people who fight for homeschooling with as little government intervention as possible.
Okay.
The article pointed out that Christina and Aaron grew up believing birth control was evil.
Cool.
That Christians will eventually win because atheists don't have as many babies, and if they can just produce as many as possible, then we'll just outbreed you and
Quiet
win that
out
way.
Loud.
Yep, they believe creationism is true. They believe
life expectancy is shorter, so it really kind of comes out in the wash, eh?
Dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark, they believe.
Oh.
Yep. They also
unicorns?
Yeah, sure. And they also think public schools were raised to believe public schools are indoctrination camps that are run by the government in part to turn Christians to turn children against Christianity.
Sure.
That's the environment they grew up in. These are people who, once they got married, everyone's just expecting them to have a lot of babies and homeschool all of them, which wouldn't be weird because that's what a lot of quiverful Christian couples do.
Yeah. I mean, oh God, have you ever interacted with a narcissist?
Like
the kind of people
avoid.
Who think everything is about them.
Mm.
Like, I feel like this is what Christians are writ large. Like, they think the rest of us are going around, trying to get our fingers into Christianity. Like, we're the villains coming at them. And it's like, oh, I don't give a shit about... Nobody is talking
about
you.
Yeah.
Nobody's thinking about you. We are not doing anything about you. You are being narcissistic. You are finding patterns that simply don't exist.
Sure. So the turning point in their lives came when, after child number four, they kind of began doing some soul searching about all this, because their problem is not an ability to homeschool. Christina Beale was more than willing to do it. They weren't worried about the material, even though there are a lot of Christian homeschooling curricula out there that are wildly full of misinformation and horrible. That's not the issue. That's a separate issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you read through the article, there were really three lies that they had to confront that they realized, wait, this one doesn't make any sense anymore. We can't do it. And then the dominoes just started to fall.
Okay.
So let me break this down, this long article, by the three lies they kind of came into contact with.
Huh.
First came the issue of physical abuse, okay? Because this is something that is part of conservative Christian circles. The lie that they were taught is that physically abusing your children is a proper form of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And here's
Spare
what happened
the rat,
in
spoil the child.
Yep, here's what they had to deal with. They were married in 2012.
Okay.
And part of their getting married process involved taking a premarital seminar run by a minister in their religious community. So conservative Christian environment, it's not mandatory like it might be with Catholics, but it's something they had to do. But one of the topics they covered in this seminar is, how are you going to discipline your future brood of children?
Yeah,
because
you're going to have 40 or 50,
exactly.
So you got to keep them in line.
And the textbook they basically used for that part of the seminar, not surprising here, Michael and Debbie Pearl's 1994 book, To Train Up a Child.
That was 1994?
94,
God, doesn't that have real 1950s vibes?
Uh-huh, don't worry. Oh, yeah. Pretty much everything we're going to talk about has 1950s vibes.
Sure.
So yeah, they used that book, and the Beals were told, just as the Pearls said in their book, that they should use physical objects to literally hit their kids. And this is what it says in the article. The handout they were given, mm-hmm. which is taken from basically what the Pearls wrote in their book, says the use of the rod is for the purpose of breaking the child's will. One way to tell Jeez. If this has happened is to see if they can look you in the eyes after being disciplined and ask for forgiveness. So that's what the
Your
book
says.
Your
child should be asking you for forgiveness
yes,
after you
thank you,
you
sir. May I
shit.
Have another? Right.
Cool. Cool.
Yep. And then, this is from the article, the Pearls advocate hitting children with tree branches, belts, and other, quote, instruments of love to instill obedience, and they recommend that toddlers who take slowly to potty training be washed outdoors with cold water from a garden hose. Their book advocates training sessions in which infants, as soon as they are old enough to crawl, are placed near a desired object and repeatedly struck with a switch if they disobey commands not to touch it. So, you can hit your kid with anything, the book says, tree branches, belts, whatever you got lying around there. What if your kid's learning how to go to the potty? Let me tell you what I did. It involved child going to the potty, and if they did it right, mm-hmm. they get an M&M, and we have a little dance-off or something. Like,
put
whatever.
A sticker on
you
a
give
chart.
Them a reward yeah. for doing it right, not a punishment for being an infant or whatever. And then this idea that,
yeah,
oh, if an infant
no carrot.
Who doesn't have their brain solidified until how old? Like 20-something? If
Two
they,
or 23?
Yeah. If they see a pacifier 26? Lying nearby and they reach for it, smack them. That's what these people are teaching their kids. That's what they're teaching as the right form of discipline.
I just truly, 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 truly do not get it. It is something that I do not think anybody will ever be able to explain to me in a way that I find satisfying, that a person you are charged with raising and you hit that you physically hurt them. I just, it just does not compute with me. And obviously it's a cycle of abuse, right? Like my parents quote unquote showed me love by hitting me. I'm going to do the same thing. Like that's kind of what it comes down to, but it's not, it doesn't have to be that way. Again, I know I always use this metaphor, but like I train horses. They're much bigger than a toddler, and I do not beat my horses because there are better methods of producing a relationship with this animal. The same way you should be pursuing a relationship with your kid, not raising them up to be a soldier in your weird imaginary Christian war. Mm-hmm. I just cannot understand, aside from, again, the cycle of abuse, I do not understand how you can hit your kid and be like, great. I feel good about that.
So here's what happened. Christina and Aaron, who were both raised with that sort of disciplinary, those methods, they suffered that abuse as kids. Mm. And in Aaron's case, he said he's now reading this on the other side of the fence as the future father, right?
Okay.
And now he's reading about this. And he's saying the euphemistic ways they talk about discipline, that this is for love. This is out of love. This is an instrument of love. And now beat your kid with it. He says that stuff, quote, did not capture the childhood terror of being struck several times a week, unquote.
God, can you imagine?
So he's looking at this and he's like, I didn't learn anything good when I was disciplined
you
like
this. You
want
to be this. Afraid of your parents.
Yeah. He said what the lesson he took away from the abuse he suffered was never challenge or question authority figures.
And they did it right.
And that's the wrong message that he wanted to send his future kids.
But he's the authority figure now.
And now he's
like
the authority figure.
That happens,
and he's like,
also
I want my kid to challenge me, and I want them to learn how to do that in the right, respectful, responsible
and
way.
And I feel like so many men would be like, good, now it's my turn to like be the abuse, you know, be on this end, the giving end instead of the receiving mm-hmm. end. Like,
I
it's
mean,
my
anyone
turn.
Who says,
I went through this, you do too.
Anyone who says, well, I was spanked as a child and I turned out fine. It's like, no, you don't. Because
you want to hit kids.
You want to hit kids. What's wrong with you?
I don't think it's appropriate to hit kids. Hot take.
So common sense told both of them, Christina and Aaron, that they didn't want to physically abuse their children.
You said this is after child four?
No. They haven't had kids at this point.
Oh, this was in the seminar before.
This was in the seminar.
Okay, I'm
after
sorry,
they,
I was confused.
As they were getting married, they're like, this is not how we're going to raise our kids. They both agreed, and they decided we're not going to follow this piece of advice when we have kids. And guess what? Once they started having kids, mm-hmm. and they did not physically abuse them, they realized, oh, hey, our kids are fine.
Yeah.
They're turning out well. They're doing normal kid stuff.
Yeah.
And hey, we ignored the conservative Christian mindset here, and things worked out fine, and our kids don't hate us, and it's nice.
Well, and also, like, you have, if we want to kind of understand what's going on in another person's head, we have to, like, care enough to ask questions. And it's much easier, instead of saying to a, understanding that this three-year-old has zero impulse control, so if she sees a cup, she's gonna fuck that shit up, and then be like, I don't know why I did that. We all have impulse control issues. And to pretend that beating the shit out of a three-year-old is going to stop them from being a three-year-old, and that you should encourage them to not be a three-year-old and explore your world and cause a little chaos, like, why are you having kids then?
Yeah, I mean, the conservative Christian mindset is, let's rule everything we can out of fear.
Yeah.
That's the way they interpret the Bible, too. God is not a God of love. Jesus doesn't want to be your friend. Mm. It's fire and brimstone for a reason, because you're supposed to fear God, therefore you obey God. So they think that's how we should raise our kids. So thankfully, Christina and Aaron said, we're not doing that. They turned out fine.
Yeah.
So now they're four kids into their marriage. And now Aaron's wondering, like, what else from my childhood was I lied to about?
So they decided not to hit their kids.
They did not, and their kids are fine.
From the jump. Okay.
Yeah. So now we're getting into lie number two, which is that they were always taught that questioning the existence of God or doubting God must be the result of trauma, which is a Christian thing that a lot of pastors and apologists say.
The irony there is gorgeous.
You know who understands trauma? Not the people who are abused in the Christian world. Uh-huh. It's atheists who have questions.
Yeah.
So anyway, he started reading books about evolution and cosmology. And the key word there is he started reading, right? Like, that's never something you're supposed to do when you're a conservative Christian.
Surely.
Not about this stuff.
Hey, read Joel Osteen's good feeling stuff.
Oh, no, they hate him.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Conservative
Christians hate that guy. Anyway,
really?
He also started listening to ex-Christians talk about their experiences. I don't know if it was like YouTubes or podcasts or what, but their experiences mirrored his own. These are not people who had an axe to grind or whatever with Christians. They were like, no, I was a true believer. This is what I experienced. And he's like, yes, that is my life. And then these people made it out. Like, they got to
the other side.
And he's listening to them speak about their experiences. And he's like, I kind of get where they're coming from and why they left. And also along the way, he starts wondering about the public elementary school in their community, which has a really good reputation. And he's like, maybe it's worth checking out instead of homeschooling. To be clear, there was nothing wrong, per se, with homeschooling their kids. Mm-hmm. They were doing it, and it was there. It was fine.
Started the homeschooling?
With the oldest kids,
With the oldest? Okay.
But there was nothing wrong with it. Their oldest at the time was not, like, I think maybe kindergarten tops.
Okay, that's kind of what I was
like.
To
she hadn't
like,
had years of it
into like the actual like first, second, third grade when they're teaching.
Maybe a little bit, but nothing intense.
Grammar and shit.
So he suggested, why don't we send our oldest daughter to public school as a, you know, we'll check it out. Let's see how it goes because I'm beginning to think it's not evil, right? The public school.
And so we're in lie number two.
This is part of lie number two. We're still in the trauma phase of question stuff you were raised to believe? And now his wife faces a uniquely conservative Christian dilemma. Am I supposed to oppose the public schools because that's what conservative Christians do?
Or disagree with my husband?
Or disagree with my husband because, you know, I'm supposed to obey my husband. And she literally is trying to figure out, like, oh, no. It's like the meme with the person looking at two buttons that are same thing. Like,
It's also a catch-22.
Yeah. So she decides, like, but one thing she realizes during all of this conversation, and Aaron is telling her that he's reading these books about evolution, and he's listening to these ex-Christians.
What's Aaron doing?
And Aaron's just doubting. He's questioning his faith.
Oh, I meant, what's the wife's name?
Christina.
Christina, what's
she's
she doing?
Whatever, I don't know what she does. So she realizes that Aaron, whatever his doubts are, and she still believes, but whatever his doubts are, they're not coming from a place of hatred. They're not coming because he hates God.
Or mad.
He's not mad about God. He has no problems in his life that are so existential. There's no trauma. He doesn't have a desire to, quote, sin. He's just thinking.
Yeah.
This is the result of introspection and reflection and normal things like that that most atheists listening to this probably went through at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
She said it was, quote, the hardest thing Aaron had ever done. which is questioning this stuff for the first time in his life. She was still a believer, but now she had more reason to at least think the dogma behind why people lose their faith or shed their faith or at least question God's existence. Maybe the stuff I was taught by those Christians I grew up with was not true either. And now she's beginning to read more about spiritual abuse because we're starting to see more stories come out about Christians who are believers and no one's doubting their faith, but they're talking about how they were physically, sexually abused by people in their churches, how people like Mark Driscoll are spiritually abusive, where you have to believe this stuff in this way, even though it's not a salvation issue, but like, no, if you're a conservative Christian, you have to be against trans people or whatever.
It feels a little bit like toxic positivity of like, you can't ever like think something is bad or like feel down on something. Everything's great. Everything is according to God's plan. And if we are unhappy, that would mean God's doing something wrong.
And you have to fight against the stuff liberals want, because that's also part of what God wants you to do.
Sure.
So she's reading about spiritual abuse, all of them. And then she's reading about Christian nationalism, which comes up in 2016, especially with Trump. And she's like,
what year are we in right now?
Sometime between 2012 and 20 now.
Okay.
But she's also reading about Christian nationalism. And like, that's disturbing to her because it doesn't comport with her idea of what Jesus wanted them to do.
And has she seen that in her group, or she's considering it all?
She's realizing that the Christian community she grew up with is very much on the side of spiritual abuse and Christian nationalism, though she's drifting further away from that stuff. She started questioning the fact that her father told her she would be wasting her time if she ever worked outside the house, which she didn't believe anymore. Like, no, I can work and do what I want to do, and I'm not wasting my time, and I'm not depriving my kids of something.
Yeah.
So, and it turns out, like, here's the bottom line. She's married to a guy she believes, and is, I'm not doubting it, like, he's a good guy. She believes that. And he's also someone who doesn't fit into that conservative Christian mold
anymore.
And now that's forcing her to rethink everything she was taught about people outside the bubble, which includes a lot of those families at the public school, because they were not from her kind of Christian background.
Sure.
So maybe they're not as evil either,
right?
Here's lie number three that she had to confront. Public schools are like these anti-Christian bastions of immorality, right? Because this is what they were taught growing up too. So now their oldest daughter, Amy, is starting to attend first grade, and they send her to the public school.
Wow.
They'll give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. They're worried. They're crying when she enters the school. Amy takes like 2 minutes, and she's like, yeah, I'm good here.
Deuces.
Like, right. She enters first grade. She fits in. She adjusts really quickly.
Good,
her teacher really quickly, once they start getting reports, you know, it takes a while when you're that young for teachers to figure out like, okay, I have a good sense of what this kid's up to. Teacher loves her.
Yeah,
she's doing great.
Good.
Amy's making new friends. Her reading skills are not just improving. Of course they would improve, but they're quickly improving faster than what it appeared she was doing at home. More importantly, like the Beals, the couple, are realizing that she's not being led astray by, like, some horde of liberal groomers.
She's counting apples, and if I take away too many apples, how many apples do I have?
Here's a quote from Aaron. I love this quotation. This is the father. People who think the public schools are indoctrinating don't know what indoctrination is. We were indoctrinated.
Hey!
It's not even comparable.
Wow.
And the article notes that this couple, like any doubts they had about public school, were, quote, usually silenced by their wonder and gratitude at the breadth of their children's education. Christina even began volunteering in the classroom, which means she is seeing firsthand what they are doing in the classroom. She's like, oh, there's no like Satan worshiping. We're not pole dancing here. Like, no, we're just counting apples. Like, this seems fine. And like, here's the thing. All of this is what educators and public school supporters, we've been saying this for years. Like, the best public schools do expose kids to a breadth and depth of knowledge and a variety of people from different backgrounds. And you almost certainly couldn't find that sort of stuff inside whatever bubble you might be in. That's not even a knock on Christianity. It's just really hard to give your kids a wide breadth of information and expose them to a variety of backgrounds and types of people when you're in a like-minded group mm-hmm. and you're limited by what you know. I mean, how many people have bragged or at least said out loud, like, I'm not a math person? That's fine. Not everyone is. But then it's going to be a little harder for you to make sure your kid is getting the sort of math education they need. Same applies to reading or history or whatever. And listen, there are homeschooling families that figure out ways around this. They know what their limitations are. Mm-hmm. They kind of outsource certain parts of their kids' education to other people.
Sure.
And like, that's fine, but not everyone does that. That's the problem. And the couple also realizes public schools are pretty heavily regulated. They have standards that are set by experts in the various fields. And if kids, and this is important, if kids begin falling through the cracks, there are systems in place to help them out. Mm-hmm.
It's not perfect or well-funded. Right. I want to be clear. They're not the United States public school system is not even that great, but...
Yeah, and that's the thing. Public schools have flaws. Yes. I am not doubting that. They are not. They should not be immune from criticism.
Right.
But the Christian right has spent decades lying about the nature of those problems and the depth of those problems and what can be done to fix those problems. And they're all spreading these lies to an audience of believers predisposed to hating anything connected to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people demonize hardworking teachers and administrators. Then they try to take over school boards in order to replace expertise, or at least people who could seek out expertise, with their form of right-wing indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point now, the Beals have sent their three oldest kids, who are of school age. They've now sent them to the public school. The youngest one's not old enough yet. Mm. But they figured out what all of us have known for a long time, which schools are fine, right? That's the idea. And to their credit, they deserve a hell of a lot of respect because to them, this is a risk. Not sending their kids to public school because that might backfire on their kids. Of course it's not. But because they're going to face backlash from their families and religious communities, and it's bound to be fierce. But they felt like this is a good move for our family. Yep. Our kids are better off going to the public schools, which can provide them with information and people and everything that we just couldn't give them on our own. Or if we wanted to, it would require so much of us that we could not do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that is to say homeschooling is evil. They are not saying that. I'm not saying that. The system only works, though, if kids are actually receiving a good, well-rounded education.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen religious communities fail at that time and time again. I was looking back at older articles, and I remember there was one homeschooling Christian a couple years ago who wrote an article where she talked about how she was tasked with writing up her own high school transcript. She had to give herself grades on her classes.
Oh.
And she's like, well, I'll throw in like a B here and there, maybe a C, just so it doesn't look like I'm just giving it. Like, what are you doing? And it won't surprise you here that Michael Ferris, the guy who runs the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, their whole shtick has always been, for many years now, has been fighting against any kind of oversight on Christian parents, a move that critics say allows abusive behavior, physical, educational abuse, all of that remains hidden from public view. They don't want states to just check in every now and then. They don't want states to verify that kids know anything. They don't want government officials looking in on any of this. They just say, we don't want our kids to go to public school. We're good. Get off our case. Lay off.
Mm.
And the truth is, that is basically, I'm sure some parents do fine, but we have firsthand accounts that show a lot of times it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to make sure students are receiving even a rudimentary education under the policy goals of those right-wing Christian groups. And there's no way to fix that. And again, what does it take to change that? It's not me saying it. How many former homeschooled kids who have come out of religious, very strict religious environments and have gone off to college maybe, and they're like, I was taking a basic community college class in, let's say, biology, and I didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the people taking the class knew a lot.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, competition's the wrong word. It's not a competition.
Couldn't keep up.
But they couldn't keep up because they didn't know anything. And they didn't know they didn't know anything until it was too late.
Can I add another piece to this? We've talked a couple times about how we are, I forgot the name of it. What is it when you, if a kid tells you they're in trouble, a mandatory reporter, mandated reporter. We're both mandated reporters in our particular other jobs. And I think a piece we lose when we talk about this kind of thing, we don't want government in our business, is that on a day-to-day, so your kids go to what, daycare or preschool or kindergarten or whatever, yeah. So they see teachers, they see aides, they administrators, see other adults. They see all these other adults, mm-hmm. all of whom are loosely making sure everybody's doing okay physically. So if a kid comes in with bruises, if a kid is not been, his hygiene is not good, if he's obviously not being taken care of, there are people in our community, that's the fucking point of a community, who are looking out for kids. Because guess what? Not all and parents legally, know what's best.
And legally required to report to a social worker or a counselor mm-hmm. if you witness bruises or weird interactions or something like that.
I was just in a therapeutic riding class, and the kid was wearing shorts, and he had bruises all over his legs, and the therapist was just sort of like, hey, you have a lot of sort of inquiring, and it was fine. But this is part of what it is to live in a society with competent adults who care about your children, is that maybe they can flag that, or maybe they will notice something that the parents don't see. And if you keep your kids either under lock and key in your house, I'm just like
in the cupboard under the staircase.
Yeah, I'm truly imagining like a farmhouse in the middle of Nebraska for some mm-hmm. reason that they just won't leave. Nobody is there to make sure those kids are okay. And we know that the vast majority of abuse happens by somebody kids love and trust and are related to, right. usually. So it is so a danger.
This couple now realizes that, yeah, these people are looking out for our kids, mm-hmm. and they're not evil, and we're not evil, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's not pro or anti-homeschooling. It's just public schools are fine, and maybe we were wrong when we were taught that mm-hmm. homeschooling is the only viable option. Mm-hmm. I should say, in 2021, American Atheist released a statement. This is, you know, a year into the pandemic. More people are homeschooling because public schools are trying to handle COVID and all that stuff. And there was this huge rise in homeschooling. It's still continuing today. In 2021, American Atheist said their fear was a lack of state-level laws protecting homeschooled children from child abuse and educational neglect.
Hey, that's the thing I just said.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things they pointed out is that only 12 states require instructors, like homeschooling included, to have any qualifications. Only 9 states required a student progress evaluation.
Wow. And 9?
Yeah,
out
only
of 50
9
states.
Uh-huh. Or 60 if you are right earlier. And then 13 states allowed religious exemptions to homeschooling requirements.
That's the one time he listens That's to that, me is yep, when I miss
Exactly. So, like, there's not enough oversight, and the Beals are realizing this, and, you know, kudos to them for sending their kids to the public schools.
That is incredibly impressive.
If they
and
can make
brave
it out.
And the fact that they're talking about it publicly is mm-hmm. genuinely, I'm blown away. That's so impressive.
The headline of the article, these Christian homeschoolers were taught that public schools are evil. Then they enrolled their kids.
Bing bong.
Right. So, I mean, just a fantastic article. If you need a free link to read it, I'll post that in the article in the show notes and stuff like that. Really, really interesting to see. And with that, let me go to a story about a dead nun, because I've spent way too much time thinking about this. Okay. This week in Missouri.
Speaking of a book I read.
Yeah, right?
The Birth of Venus.
In Missouri, hundreds, if not thousands, of Catholics descended upon the town of Gower, Missouri, G-O-W-E-R, to catch a glimpse of a dead nun's corpse. Yes, a miracle, supposedly. Have you heard?
I saw a lot of, I've not been online much, but I saw a lot of headlines of all these people are going to Nowheresville to see a miracle.
To see a miracle, yes.
Very excited.
I'm going to tell you about this miracle, and then you're going to be like, that ain't a miracle, and then we'll all agree. Yes.
Is it a dead person is still dead?
She is still dead. The story is weirder than that. Here's who we're talking about. Let's get this out of the way. Her name is Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster. Her claim to fame is that when she was 70, she founded a Catholic group called the Benedictine Sisters of Mary, Queen of the Apostles, also a kick-ass band name. That was when she was 70. Mm. She died in 2019 when she was 95. So she lived a good long life.
Sure.
She also founded this order of Catholic nuns. The order still exists today.
She went through like 18 wars.
Right. And so here's the thing. If you know anything about dead bodies, they are often embalmed to prevent them from decaying. So what happens? There's a dead body. The funeral's in 2 weeks. What do you do with the corpse, right? Because you might want to have an open casket funeral. Mm-hmm. So the people who handle that sort of a thing, they embalm it. What does that mean? They're going to take care of it. They're going to make sure it's... what's the word I'm looking for?
I'm so sorry. You trying to explain embalming is so funny.
Yes.
They literally just drain all of the fluid out of the person and replace it with embalming fluid.
Yes.
To prevent basically rotting from the inside.
They preserve the body.
I could
have
listened to you
viewable.
Try to explain embalming for the rest of my life.
I will do that
so
in the
do,
bonus episode.
They touch the skin. They clean. They clean the skin and then they embalm me on top. They embalm
Thank
on
you.
Top.
Thank you. So they normally do that for dead bodies. They did not do that when Lancaster died. So that's point one to take note of. They did not
embalm her.
Embalm her.
Okay.
She also was placed in a coffin that we apparently later found out had a small crack in it, which just creates an opening for like moisture and dirt. All of this is to say everyone thought like, well, she's been dead for 4 years. This body is decayed. Her corpse is rotting. But also, does it matter? Because it's underground and who is going to go look at it, right?
Why are we checking on the state of her corpse?
Right. It shouldn't matter. She's dead, right?
How long ago?
4 years ago.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Her sisterhood that she founded decided to...
Traveling pants?
Yes. They wanted to move her body to a new resting place inside their chapel, which is, I think they just built it or something. So they wanted
they
to preserve
like,
her body.
Her.
Yeah. They wanted to put her body in a coffin there. Mm.
But so people could walk over her for all of eternity, just like she wanted.
Yeah, I don't know what they were going to do exactly. Like, were they just going to leave the coffin in a place of presence so we could pray over it or
they
what?
They do it in, like, Westminster Abbey. They have people, like, fucking entombed all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's very creepy.
So this is the thing. And they do this for founders of Catholic orders, so it's not even that weird.
They're like, there's not corpses under our feet. Jesus.
So they expected that when they exhumed this body, they would find whatever were the remains of her
corpse.
4 years,
so almost skeletal by this point.
You would think, right? Like, maybe you find bones and whatever is left. It's not pleasant. No. It's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. What was shocking, and this is what was the miraculous part, is that that's not what they found.
Oh.
What they found is that her body still looked pretty intact.
Do you have a picture of it?
I do, if you want to see a corpse.
Of course I do.
I'll show you the picture here. The picture looks like they buried her and it's her body and it's just sitting there and it doesn't look like anything happened. It looks like she died yesterday.
She looks like she doesn't look like she died yesterday to me. She looks like she's mummified.
Dead.
Like,
sure.
She's dead.
Here's
and
from
looks
an article.
Dead.
This is from an article. Exhumers found a layer of mold on Lancaster's body, likely due to condensation in the cracked coffin. But little of Lancaster's corpse or her habit that she was buried in decomposed while she was buried. And so they were like, well, that seems unusual. And in fact, I did not know this. I know this now. Catholics have a word for bodies that don't decompose.
Do they?
It's called incorrupt. And it's said to be a sign of holiness and a possible miracle, therefore justification for sainthood. Because if you want to be a saint, you have to have performed 2 miracles. This could be a miracle.
Oh.
Apparently, 100 bodies have been deemed incorrupt by the Catholic Church in the past.
I've heard of something like this before. It's not impossible.
Not impossible. A part of the buzz this time around is that if Sister Lancaster is said to be incorrupt, it would be the first time it happened to a black woman. So that was part of the reason people cared about this. According to someone at the monastery, we think she is the first African-American woman to be found incorrupt. Okay, so there's a possibility that there's something extraordinary happening, that this body may belong to a future saint. And that's why all these people are going to Missouri to check out this body, because they think they're witnessing history, and they might be looking at a future saint. And they've prayed and asked the dead body to intervene in their lives.
I'm looking at a different picture. The one I looked over Hammond's shoulder at just was kind of like from her feet. I'm looking at one... from above, and she does, to me, she looks like somebody who, they find a lot of bodies that get caught in, like, bogs and other places that, like, kind of delay, or, like, really, really cold areas so they don't really decompose, but they're 20,000 years old. Like, that's kind of the vibe it is of, like, pretty dried, but also, if there is mold in there, if there is moisture in there, like, shit I don't know, science happens. I don't know shit about science, but I don't call that a miracle.
We'll get to the science. So the Catholic Diocese of Kansas City, St. Joseph, issued a statement saying, you guys, calm down.
Oh.
We're not calling this a miracle yet.
Yet.
Like, lay off. The bishop is working, they said in their statement, working to establish a thorough process for understanding the nature of the condition of the nuns' remains.
Yeah, Catholics and they definitely said, need lots of evidence for their...
right. There is a well-established process to pursue the cause for sainthood, but that has not been initiated in this case yet. Basically saying, calm down. We didn't say it was a miracle. So, like, if you're looking at the body,
sure,
you're doing this on your own, not because we told you to do it.
Come see our body, donate to our church.
Yeah, exactly. So, my favorite part about this is that different reporters reached out to actual scientists when it comes to this.
Great.
At least CNN, I think, reached out to a professor in forensic anthropology, and they're like, mm-hmm, hey, what's going on?
That's the right person to talk to.
Right? What's going on with this body? And the response was, shrug. Like, here's what this professor said. It's hard to say how common this is because bodies are rarely exhumed after burial, but there are many famous cases of well-preserved human remains. Not just things like Egyptian mummies, which were intentionally preserved, but also things like the bog bodies of Europe, which were well-preserved for thousands of years because, like you said, they were in environments with low oxygen that restricted bacterial growth and access of the remains to scavengers. This professor also said, this is important, in general, when we bury a body in our human decomposition facility, which I 100% want to know more about.
Of course.
He says, we expect it will take 5 years, roughly 5 years, for the body to become skeletonized. That is, without a coffin or any other container or wrapping surrounding the remains. So for this body, which was buried in a coffin, I personally don't find it too surprising that the remains are relatively well-preserved after only 4 years. Saying, I know you all think it's weird because you have in your mind a vision of what any dead corpse looks like from movies or whatever.
Yeah, the end of Psycho is like,
But I am telling you, after 4 years, if she was in a coffin, yeah, she probably kind of still looks like Nana. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that weird. Check back in 100 years.
Right.
Then we'll talk about a potential miracle.
Yeah, I listen to and read about a lot of true crime, and this sort of rate of decomposition of a body is very hard to tell. Like, really, depending on, like you said, the circumstance, like it's hard to tell how long something's been, because somebody can be skeletal in 3 months if they're in the woods with a bunch of like bugs and animals around there.
It's also really easy to conjure up mental images of what things look like. I mean, I've heard this of, what do you think an alien looks like? If you think it's green with big eyes, it's because you watch a lot of movies, but there's no basis in reality.
Right.
Do you remember those pictures, like,
except for the people who saw the aliens,
well, obviously.
Obviously.
The people who promote, who are anti-abortion, and they're like, this is what a fetus looks like at, you know, half a minute old. And they show you a picture, and it's basically a human baby, but shrunk. And it's like, that's not what it... And then when you see an actual scientific picture of what it looks like, that's bacteria in a lab on a Petri dish somewhere. And it's like, because no one knows what it looks like, because we're not used to seeing what a fetus looks like in the womb at 2 weeks old or whatever it is. Same thing with dead bodies. We're not used to seeing a wide array of what decomposing bodies look like 4 years after being buried. You don't have a good sense of what that should look like and what something weird looks like, because we don't look at those things. And here's the thing. Catholics do this thing all the time, where they take things that are purported miracles because they don't know any better, assume it's a miracle, and then there are clear signs that, no, there's a good explanation for this. For example, they might say this was a communion wafer and it was consecrated and therefore it was the literal body of Christ, Catholics say, and then, you know, we dropped it and then we put it in like a cup for preservation and then the cup turned red.
Red?
And it must
that's
be the blood
cover.
Of Jesus.
Oh.
And it's like, buddy, that's just what happens when a wafer is in mixes with this liquid. There's nothing weird about that. Or they might see a Virgin Mary statue in the church, and it looks like it's shedding real tears. And then scientists analyze the liquid, and they're like, no, we know where that liquid is coming from.
Oh, yeah, I interviewed
all this stuff.
What's his face? it doesn't matter.
There you go.
Thank you.
There were a lot of quotations with some of the Catholics who were visiting the dead nun's corpse to pray over it. One person called it an incredibly rare opportunity to see the hand of God at work. Another person...
I thought that was babies.
Yeah, that too. Everything's the hand of God at work, right?
Yeah,
another person said, I feel like people are like, wow, we need this right now. That's why she drove 5 hours to witness the corpse.
I'm about to drive 5 hours to Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
To see a dead corpse?
I mean, I don't know that there's not a dead corpse that I will see in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
There you go. And here's the thing. Like, I'm not even upset with any of the people going to visit the corpse because, like, they want hope.
Sure, whatever.
Of course, they're going to assume the outlandish. Yes, it's illogical. Yes, it's unscientific. Mm. Yeah, same thing with horoscope people. You just want to believe, so you'll believe bullshit. I mean, fine, whatever. They're not hurting anybody. They're just, if you're spreading it, now I have a problem with you. But whatever. If you just need hope, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of anger for the Catholic leaders who refuse to set them straight and who always seem to lean into the possibility that this might be a miracle.
Oh, maybe.
We don't know for sure yet, but like the other miracles that we said were miracles that are not miracles, that stuff's legit.
Totally.
This one, you know, we still got to do our research and then we're going to call it a miracle because of course they are.
Of course it is a miracle.
No one's, they're never going to release a statement saying we looked into this and you know what, you guys? This one's not special. Sorry, she can go back in the ground.
I have a very important question. What is the process of verifying a miracle? What does that look like?
We've talked about it on this show when it came to Mother Teresa and they had to verify two miracles. And the thing is, it's always the dumbest shit. It's nothing that would pass scientific muster. It's just we found a couple of people who said it was a miracle and they have letters after their name, so it's a miracle. Scientific research is about what you would see in Roswell, New Mexico. Mm. It's like, I know some of you think it's supernatural, and we're not here to tell you it's not, but we'll just put it out there and you do with it what you will. And honestly, if you look at the numbers...
aliens crash here, but wouldn't it be cool if they did?
Her body may be one of the only thing drawing people to a Catholic church these days, so of course they're not going to wreck with the business model at this point.
All press is good press.
I cannot believe that's
wild. That is wild.
All right, there's a story I saw this week that involves all of my favorite things, which is politics and a horrible pastor and Survivor. And it all crossed paths, and it's glorious. Okay, I'm going to tell you the backstory here. Pastor John Raymond is the name you got to know. This guy has spent decades in the church as a church leader in Louisiana.
Just people with two
first names. John Raymond. He's the head of a place called Lakeside Christian School. And just over a year ago, not decades ago, just over 1 year ago, John Raymond was arrested. Why? Because apparently there were three kids in this private Christian school who were talking in class, and so they were sent to the principal's office to be reprimanded. And what did this guy do as the head of the school? He literally taped their mouths shut and, like, wrapped the tape over their heads to make sure, like, their mouths were shut. And the kids were apparently stuck in that with the tape over their mouths for 45 minutes, according to police later.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And other administrators at the school are like, we feel very awkward about what's happening here. And they're the ones who cut the tape off of the kids' mouths.
So they would have been there longer.
They might have been there longer. The police later said the students complained that they had trouble breathing while their mouths were taped.
What?
And that when they ripped off, I mean, when they took off the tape, it was painful because of course it was.
Was this duct tape? It doesn't matter.
I don't know. I was looking for that.
I don't know why the type of tape really matters to me right now.
I thought it was duct tape when I heard it because that would definitely hurt. I'll tell you the answer is no, it's not. But the police said also that they presented their evidence to a judge later, and a few hours later, John Raymond turned himself into the police. And he was booked into the local jail for 3 counts of cruelty to juveniles. Child cruelty.
What's a third count, I wonder?
The 3 kids.
Oh, there's three.
It.
I thought there's only 2 kids.
No, there were 3. And here's his defense in court. One, I gave them the option of using transparent scotch tape. As if that makes everything better.
As opposed to
whatever the hell he
used. Masking tape, right?
I don't know. He also offered to call their parents and suspend the kids. But, you know, the kids didn't want me to call the parents. It's really their fault.
It's so funny because kids have famously good decision-making skills.
And then he said, I asked the kids if they were in pain and could breathe, and they told me they could. That was his defense.
What is the I have a new theory that the greatest danger to our world right now is petty tyrants. It's not like the fucking Mitch McConnells of the world. It is these motherfuckers who get the tiniest grip of power and completely come unhinged. And I genuinely believe that this is like a prominent problem in America right now. I have a book coming out later this year. I can't wait to share it.
And then this guy also said he could not believe that in the media, in the courts, like he was being treated as the bad guy. He said
he stands by it.
Yeah. These students were given a choice between suspension
and corporal punishment.
And temporary tape is what he said. And later he said no student was ever treated with cruelty or harmed in any way.
I can't stop thinking about accidentally like tearing off some of your lip skin and how much that hurts. Like if you,
guy, he did claim the tape was never wrapped around their heads. The police said otherwise after talking to the kids. He also said it was often under 10 minutes. That is not what the police said either after discussing it with the kids, but it doesn't matter. He still did it. No one's doubting that. Yeah. And like it hurt the kids. No one's doubting that. Anyway, that's part one of the story.
What?
Part two. Oh, it gets worse. Part two of the story. Just months after that incident, he was arrested again. Guess why?
Same thing?
Child cruelty. Again.
Same?
Uh-huh. This time, the new allegations was that there was a 4-year-old boy sent to his office. I'm just going to read this. The police said the new allegations include John Raymond holding a 4-year-old boy upside down by his ankles and, quote, whipping his buttocks. And in a separate incident, covering the same child's mouth and nose with his hand to stop a tantrum. In a press release, police said witnesses reported Raymond's actions prevented the child from breathing to the point of him going limp. The witness, a staff member, said the child was, quote, out of it and lethargic and, quote, unable to stand.
Oh, my God.
Fourth count of child cruelty now. So now, John Raymond now takes a voluntary leave of absence. Private Christian school.
Okay.
He takes a voluntary leave of absence from the school at this point, but he denies doing anything wrong. So that's part two. So this guy.
And he keeps doing it. He genuinely doesn't think he's doing anything wrong.
Doesn't think he's doing anything wrong.
God, this is like the first season of Mindhunter with that teacher who liked to tickle kids. And people know what I'm talking about. They're going to get on board for that.
Sure. He pleaded not guilty to all these charges. He's literally appearing in court next week as we record this for a trial date for like the first of the charges, the three charges. So
they're separate trials?
They're all separate trials. Jeez. And by the way, separately from all of this, four parents have also sued him over the alleged abuse.
Wow.
And their lawsuit mentions a completely different incident from like 6 years ago in which he allegedly assaulted another child and caused, quote, serious bodily injury or, quote, neurological impairment.
No.
That's according to the lawsuit. We don't know if that's true, but that's
it. Is that what Jesus wanted to do?
Is exactly
punish children into psychological impairments?
He said it in one of the Gospels. I can't remember which.
Acts.
It's in there. I'm sure. Not one of the Gospels.
Deuteronomy.
So, not even close.
I know.
So, that's what he's done at school, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's the other side of this guy.
Is John one of the Gospelers?
John is one of the Gospelers. Nicely done.
Fuck you, Bible. I know you.
There you go. Separately from all this, this guy happens to be a prominent Republican. Surprise, you knew that was coming.
I mean,
in 2018, he ran for a seat in the Louisiana State House.
Oh, boy.
Why? His campaign was, I love Donald Trump and I hate gay people. And Republicans said...
Good platform in 2016.
2018.
Oh,
Republicans
boy.
Rejected him. He lost the primary. They selected another horrible Republican. But he lost. He was not even good enough for Republicans. In 2019...
He's like, I gotta hit kids harder.
In 2019, there was a special election, and he ran for that, and he lost that one, too.
Take the hint, my dude.
So that's another thing. Like, that's how unlikable this guy is. By the way, after all the child abuse, child cruelty allegations came out, he gave a speech that same month to the St. Tammany Republican Parish Executive Committee, where he served as an elected GOP official, and he said all the allegations against him are false and that he's a victim of...
Cancel culture.
That is correct. And by the way, none of those people asked him to resign from his job leading the local Republican Party. In fact, the Louisiana Republican Party State Central Committee, on which he also serves, did not punish him either.
I don't because think Republicans are sending us their best people.
No, I think they are, and that's the problem. And here's part three. You had to wonder where Survivor was coming into this.
Oh, God, I forgot again. Right? What a compelling story this is, Hemant.
I know you don't know this, but in 44 seasons of Survivor, there is one objectively worst season of Survivor. It's season five. It's season that was based in Thailand. And John Raymond was on the show that season.
Whoa!
He was on the island on season five of Thailand. And guess what? In the worst season of Survivor. And why is it the worst? Because no one there is likable. You hate everybody. You hate the guy who eventually won the show. You hate everyone. They're all boring. They're all annoying. He was so annoying, he was the first one voted off on a whole season full of unlikable people. Are like, no, this guy's too annoying for all of us.
Too much. Wow.
What does that say about him? He has no self-awareness, no ability to work in social situations.
No one likes him.
No one likes him. So, like, just
how
to establish
he get
the fact.
To run a school.
Because, again, best Republican, worst human.
Forgot. Yep.
So, this is a guy who was on a place where his past could not theoretically hurt him because he was on Survivor. They didn't know him, and he was unlikable then. He ran as a Republican. He was unlikable enough. They didn't vote for him twice. At this school that he runs recently, he's been charged with all sorts of things.
Well, he's like, how come nobody likes me? Maybe I need to beat more children. Mm-hmm. That'll do it. And now here we are.
There we are. So why am I bringing all of this up? Why am I bringing all this up?
Because you want to talk about Survivor.
Well, that is true. He just announced this week that he is once again running for the Louisiana State House.
Yeah, bud.
He just announced his campaign. Following all four counts of child cruelty, he's like, you know what? I'm going to ride this.
Like I said earlier this episode, there's no such thing as bad press, man.
Yep. Let me tell you what he said in his campaign.
He's got name recognition. Yeah. Maybe.
In his announcement. I feel it's important people who believe in conservative Christian principles hold positions to create laws to direct our state properly.
Oh, yeah, that's their, like, motto, right?
We need conservative Christians
to run this country. Uh-huh. Otherwise, it's going to go to hell, which, ironically, it's turning into hell because they won't do anything about climate change.
He added, I've spent 23 years serving St. Tammany Parish in promoting Christian conservative values, and I feel compelled to run to bring those values into law.
Vote for me.
I'll make your three-year-old
pass out.
Oh, my God. Yep.
Brag.
He also said he wants to protect children from the, quote, woke trans agenda. Trans agenda is one word with a hyphen. The woke trans agenda.
Mm.
As if the biggest threat to children isn't a dude like him.
Sorry, I'm just really hung up on the grammar of trans agenda. Like, is it a compound modifier? So, like, the trans agenda group or something like that?
It's a great question.
I like about this guy is that he has so little self-awareness that he is a man who thinks it is appropriate to physically humiliate. Let's not forget that part of it. Actually, let's sit with that for a minute. We're not talking about, like, a spanking that happened in private by your dad. This is a thing that happened at your school, a place you were supposed to be safe, and you are being humiliated by an adult.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with that? Like, as a 12-year-old, I was embarrassed of everything. And I just cannot imagine bouncing back from a teacher
fully abusing me. Yep.
In more or less public. Like, I just cannot imagine being this person.
As a local Republican leader, this John Raymond has appeared in the Capitol before because he testified in a bunch of hearings supporting bills like requiring schools to post In God We Trust in the classroom.
It makes me so fucking mad.
And
because it's not even this guy is, like, ignoring abusive teachers. He is the abusive teacher, and he's still like, look over there. That's the problem. The gays are beating your... Oh, shit, no, that's me. The gays are woking your kids. I guess that's bad.
Sure. Ugh. He also fought to allow historical Bible courses to be taught in public schools and in favor of anti-trans anti-gay restrictions.
I still think that there should be some kind of Bible class taught by a competent adult, because I do think that
objectively,
it is a literary piece.
That's never what these people want.
I've said this before. I read part of the Bible for my lit class in college. Like, it is literature, right?
It's literature. It could be taught as literature, but not the way these people want to do it. I should say, why is he even running?
Big Book of Rules.
He's running for a seat in a Louisiana district, District 104, which is reliably red, and it's currently represented by a Republican who cannot run again because of term limits. Mm. That's why he's jumping in, because the person who could probably beat him is no longer there. Which is to say, it's possible another awful Republican could beat him in a primary, but he's the first one to jump into the race. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he'll have any opponents. But the fact that someone like him could theoretically win, because he could, because he is a prominent Republican, and they don't care about hurting kids.
Is this a 2024 election, or is it this year?
This is, I think, later this year in Louisiana. I think maybe they do odd-year elections.
I do not understand how elections work.
It, the unearned confidence
of a
conservative Christian pastor who thinks he's on a moral crusade when he's the enemy everyone else needs to look out for. He'll just dismiss every allegation as a hoax. He will label all of his critics anti-Christian, and all of that's going to be red meat for white evangelicals who ignore all the charges and just focus on, you're against woke, I'm for you.
I was genuinely just about to ask whether or not he was white, because I assumed he was, but then I thought, you know, Jess, you shouldn't make assumptions. Not all abusive monsters are white men.
He is. Ah. Yep.
Just add that to the list.
Just add it.
Listen, not all men, certainly that one.
Yep.
I'm still looking for the not ones.
That was the season of Survivor where the winner was a softcore adult movie star.
Oh, good for her.
And everyone, him. Oh, yeah, it was great. It was scandalous. And it really wasn't. No one cares. But it was just a bad season. Anyway, let's talk about the Catholic Church really quickly, because I saw this remarkable story. This is a Bay Area affiliate of NBC News. They published this story because here's what they learned. We know the church is abusive. Yeah, we know the Catholic Church has harbored abusive priests and everything like that. In this case, they basically figured out that the Catholic diocese in their community ignored a case of abuse, and then that person went on to abuse people again and again and again. Hmm. Here's the story, and I think this is worth talking about. Their piece centered around a woman named Danielle LaCampagne. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but she basically, in the 1970s, went to a private Catholic school in San Francisco. She told the Catholic leaders at that school at the time that she was I shouldn't say at the time, but when she attended in the 70s, she said she was abused by Father Daniel Carter at the school she attended.
Okay.
The story was, Carter came over to her family's house for dinner. She was 8 at the time.
No.
It was time for her to go to bed, so she went to go say goodnight to the priest who was visiting their home as the guest. And I'm going to quote this. Sorry, you can forward like 10 seconds.
Can I?
You can. You can just look away. Mm. I was wearing my pajamas, and he took his hand, and he put it up my pajama shirt and felt my chest area. And then he took his hand and put it down my pajama pants and felt my bottom area and vagina area. So this happened when she was 8. In 2002.
What the fuck is wrong with people?
In 2002, this woman, Danielle, starts reading about what's happening. The Boston Globe spotlight stories about the Catholic Church. She learns about the sex scandal. She realizes, wait a minute, I'm not alone here. Mm. Other people were also abused, just like I was abused. Mm-hmm. And that guy, the priest who did this, never faced any repercussions for what he did. She knew he was still working for the church.
Oh, he was still working at the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's now 2002. It's 3 decades later. So she finally, now at this point, 2002, reports him to the Archdiocese of San Francisco and relives all that trauma. And by the way, she also filed a police report. She also filed a lawsuit. Uh-huh. But she did report this guy to the Archdiocese. She worked as a social worker at this point. Her job is protecting kids. So she did everything she knew how to do as a social worker to now take care of herself, right? And the thing is, the priest was Father Carter. He was temporarily placed on leave while the claim was investigated. The lawsuit she filed was settled out of court. There was no admission of guilt. And the church later said that we reviewed the allegations, but we believe they are, quote, unfounded. So the priest was allowed to come back
because
to work.
The priest said no.
Right, pretty much.
Nuh-uh.
And
that's his
thing.
Defense. No.
At that point, the church isn't going to take not action. Me. The lawsuit doesn't go anywhere. At least it's settled. So there's not much she could do on that
measure.
So this
is the first act of a vigilante movie.
Well, and the police, I don't think they could do anything at this point because
sure, it's, statute of limitations.
It's really hard to do anything. But here's the thing. In 2019, if you recall, the California legislature said, in response to all the Catholic abuse, we're going to open a 3-year window for adults to file lawsuits relating to child sexual abuse if, in the past, you were locked out from doing so because of statutes of limitations.
Right.
Well, guess what? She's already filed her lawsuit. She can't do it again. Mm-hmm. So she's out of the running here. But the lawsuit said, I should mention, that bill said people as old as 40 could file sexual abuse cases that affected them when they were kids.
Age.
And if you are older than 40, you can file similar lawsuits up to 5 years after you discovered that the psychological injury or illness was caused by sexual assault, since it's not always obvious at the time. Long story short, that 3-year window gave a lot of people who may have now, later in life, come to grips with the fact that they were victims.
And it an opportunity them to like face it and deal with it.
So that window went from January 1st, 2020 to December 31st, 2022. The window is now closed. Like, we now know how many people filed lawsuits and like what came of that window. And according to NBC, more than 1,500 lawsuits were filed against Catholic institutions in Northern California alone.
Northern California.
Oh, just that part.
God.
And guess what? 6 of those lawsuits they reported this week came from other victims of Carter who said they were abused around the same time Danielle was.
Oh,
this is
God,
from their article.
Sweet girl.
They accused the longtime priest in separate lawsuits of sexually abusing them as children at different moments in his career between the 1970s and 2000. One of the new lawsuits alleges Carter repeatedly fondled an 8-year-old girl attending a San Francisco Catholic school in 1981, which would be after Danielle.
Jesus.
A second plaintiff alleges the priest did similar things to her around the same time. The abuse described in those campaigns, in those cases, closely mirrors Danielle's own account. So, obviously, her lawsuit would not have changed what those other victims say happened to them, but the fact is,
she's now backed up by empirical evidence.
Yeah. She reported him in 2002, and the church said, eh, there's nothing to see here.
So how long has he been working since?
He was still working as recently as a couple years ago in the church. And, like, here's the thing. If the church had a better system in place at the time for reporting allegations of abuse and a better system, I mean, which they didn't in the 70s, and a better system to review those allegations, which they did not in the early 2000s when she filed that claim, church leaders could have taken immediate action, but because the systems weren't in place, this guy just found victim after victim after victim. And I don't know whether the church dismissed her concerns because of incompetence on their end or malice, but they let this Father Carter roam free from church to church, and he always had access to children.
Mm-hmm.
An attorney for 2 of the new victims say all of this should cause people to question how seriously the Catholic Church takes sexual abuse and why their internal review process is a sham. He said, "This is an institution that has shown us time and time again that it cannot be trusted to self-police itself."
Yep.
And that is the point. The pile of bodies just grows when you don't take action. And by the way, it took a secular government run by Democrats to show the moral courage that Catholic Church leaders never had by passing a bill putting power back in the hands of these alleged victims.
Oh, God. It's just, it just feels so big sometimes and so out of control of the, it's genuinely, it feels gaslighty. It feels like I'm being manipulated all the time because I'm constantly being fed a barrage of trans people are predators and drag queens are trying to fuck your kids or whatever. Meanwhile, we know who is doing this, and it's all of the white youth pastors with spiky hair and the Catholic Church's boys
and
their,
the people
and their
who
fancy
vote for
dresses.
The Republicans.
Truly.
Right?
Like, and it, I don't, I think that's the thing that makes me, like, want to scream cry is these people who are saying, like, we're trying to protect our children. And it's like, but
then those are the people you need to protect them from.
Those are the bad
guys. The guns are over there. Like,
It genuinely...
There are all the things you could be doing, but you don't care.
It distresses me beyond measure. Like, I can't think about it too much because it's like a computer when you ask them to do, like, an impossible question when you ask a robot and your brain just, like, fries. You know? You know that thing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, sure.
Some people, yes, and. Hemant just silences.
That. You've captured my personality perfectly. Mm-hmm. Last story for you here this week. There's a Republican lawmaker in Michigan, which is now, thankfully, blue.
Woo!
Trifecta in the government. But a Republican lawmaker wants to pass legislation requiring public schools to basically lie to kids and teach them about the, quote, Christian foundations of the United States. And this is a guy named Representative Joseph Fox. He's a first-term legislator. I checked out his campaign Facebook page where he repeatedly says things like Jesus, quote, is not dead, then in all caps, he is risen. And he says Jesus defeated death, sin, and Satan, which is weird because these people all say Satan is causing a bunch of things, so he didn't
defeat
him.
Sure, he's a busy boy.
He is busy. His campaign website boasts that this guy, Joseph Fox, was a Christian school administrator and teacher for 25 years, and that he has been a pastor and missionary. And these are all said in the sense that this is why you should vote for me to write your laws. I don't really understand that.
Some people think those are good things.
Yeah. I looked up his legislative accomplishments. Mm-hmm. It's easy to see on the Michigan website. And what are his, quote, accomplishments?
He's filed
one bill to hurt trans kids.
Finally.
He also passed a resolution declaring the first week of April, Easter, as Holy Week in the state of Michigan. That's all he's done so far in the legislature.
It's like fucking what's-his-face goes to what? Mr. Smith goes to Washington. This guy gets into power and he's like, I'm going to change things for good. I'm going to fuck up some trans kids' lives and I'm going to declare a meaningless bullshit holiday that nobody's going to really know about.
Yep.
I am doing good.
Let me see if I can ruin history too. Right. So this is what this bill does. This is House Bill 4672. The relevant part of it says, basically, public schools must do it, in each U.S. history and civics course that your school offers, the Christian foundations of the United States basically must be taught.
Does he have a particular book that he...
I'll get there. Teaching must include, but is not limited to, information concerning how the pilgrims emigrated because of persecution and how that influenced the ideals and fundamentals behind early communities and how, as these communities were formed, the communities cultivated democratic forms of government and Christian ethics simultaneously for the prosperity and safety of the Commonwealth.
So Christian ethics, just so I can clear, I can be clear, 1776 Christian ethics were slavery mm-hmm. is cool,
mm-hmm.
Native Americans should probably be murdered mm-hmm. pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
And those we don't murder, we're going to make into little clones of ourselves and then mm-hmm. still separate them so they never feel like they fit in anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Are those kind of the main...
You hit the nail.
Women can't vote or own property or have a checking account for almost 200 years after this.
You're thinking of Indiana.
No, that was the United States of America. Oh. We couldn't get checking accounts till the 70s, motherfuckers.
Mm. So, Christian ethics...
Do people know that women could not get checking accounts until the fucking 1970s? People should be more mad about that.
I'll work on that for the next episode. So... this guy, to answer your question, what textbook does he recommend? He doesn't. He just says, teach Christian ethics. What Christian ethics? He doesn't say. What Christian foundations does he want these schools to talk about? He doesn't say. But he told the Detroit News, his objective is clear. He just wants to shift the narrative from all those pesky historical accounts connecting our nation's founding with slavery to something that makes his side look better. Here's the statement. Fox
said... why are they so afraid of history?
Because it makes them look bad. Fox said there were, quote,
but they
narratives...
they tell us all the time.
Fox said there were narratives that attempted to categorically shift the focus of instruction about the colonial era. Among the narratives, Fox mentioned the 1619 Project that aims to reframe the country's history by placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans at the very center of our national narrative.
And that's
he's mad that we teach kids about slavery and that it's essentially what our whole country is based on. And he wants them to learn, but Christians are good and we're all Christian and we were founded as Christians.
This is 100% the dude who is like, actually, slaves were treated like members of family, and they were
by
the good Christians, the bad Christians. Well, the bad ones weren't Christian. If they say they're Christian, they are not. Don't get it twisted.
They were Joel Osteen's.
They were. I mean, these fucking people.
I mean, here's the thing. You can't talk about the literal foundations of our country without discussing the role of slavery. You can, however, ignore conservative Christianity because
it's not done anything good in 200 years.
That too, because the founders were not this brand of conservative Christians, and a lot of them were not Christians. Mm. And like, they made it clear, if anything else, that an important aspect of evading religious persecution was religious neutrality by the government. That's why Jesus isn't in the founding documents. Like, if Christianity played any role in our founding, it's that it was a justification to uphold slavery, prevent swaths of the country from voting or owning land. And look, if he wants to teach that aspect of religion,
prohibition,
that too,
which did end up killing a lot of people. Well, that was the FBI that killed a lot of people. But if he wants to follow me for more about prohibition.
There, if he wants to make sure that history of his religion is taught, fine, sure. But, like, I think he's getting all this BS from the Christian pseudo-historian David Barton, who has spent his career spreading misinformation about the founder's supposed Christian leanings. But he never mentioned Barton in the law, in the bill, in Facebook, whatever.
I mean,
but it's always from that guy.
Were there, you know? His vibes are all over it.
And then when
he's
he was
that
asked,
Barton stink on it. It's a Barton Fink joke.
Sure. And then when he was asked about church-state separation, he said, well, that's not specifically mentioned in the U.S. or Michigan Constitution. And then he added, I'm theocratic. He said, I'm going to quote the article.
He calls himself a theocrat.
Fox said, in a sense, he is theocratic. God is in charge of the government, he said of his belief system. Whatever, I'll let the theocratic thing slide. But the thing is, the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and the Establishment Clause is very much about church-state separation. Mm-hmm. By the way, Article 1 of Michigan's Constitution is all about church-state separation and religious neutrality by the government. Hmm. That's the whole point of it. So he hasn't read that either. You won't find the exact phrase if you tried copying and pasting it, separation of church and state. But if you're looking for the underlying principle, it is in both documents.
I do think that conservatives are very good at skating around the separation of church and state because they're so like, gotcha, that they're like, well, it does not say the word separation of church and state. And
it also doesn't say Jesus. It doesn't say Christian. Do you want to play this game? It's not going to end well
truly,
for you.
Truly, but they also just kind of oh boy, I lost my train of thought. Okay, go
on. Okay, so here's the thing, though. Michigan, run by Democrats. Mm-hmm. This bill will not pass, thankfully. It's not Oklahoma, it's not Texas, whatever. And the Democrats had a field day with this.
Good.
One Democrat...
They deserve to have some fun up there.
The chairman of the House Education Committee tweeted, "We will not take up unconstitutional bills written by people who oppose a well-rounded education in favor of religious indoctrination."
No, couldn't have said it better myself.
Another Democrat tweeted, "This Jewish member of the majority party says over my dead body regarding this
Good
bill."
Good for I wonder, how do they... like, what would Dan Fox's...
Joseph Fox.
Joseph Fox. Dan Fox is the guy I did in high school.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
What is his reaction to, hey, I'm Jewish, go fuck yourself? Because it's not...
Yeah.
I feel like atheists, they just pretend we don't exist. It doesn't matter. They don't care about hurting our feelings. It's hard to me to envision them saying
he
to
offended a
Jewish
person. And like, I looked on all of his websites, campaign site, Facebook, everything. He hasn't said anything about this bill at all, except in this one article where the reporters asked him about it. So he didn't respond to the Democrats who were saying no. But like, here's the thing. This bill has like 9 Republican co-sponsors. Not a single one of them.
Really?
Yep.
Nine.
Not a single one of them cares about Michigan students getting a strong, comprehensive, secular education. Mm-mm. They love to scare people with words like indoctrination and grooming, all while perpetuating both of those things themselves. Because if it's done in the name of Jesus, they'll let anything slide. So the good news, this bill is not going to pass. But that doesn't mean you should ignore the fact that Republicans would try to get this done if you vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
They just thankfully don't have enough power in Michigan. So, yay. And with that...
Oh, is that it?
That is it.
Oh, boy, I have to pack.
Have fun.
Yeah, we can do it like a quick...
You can find me at Hemant Mehta on whatever's left of Twitter. You could support this show by going to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. Email us, friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about, I guess the commercials have been really loud lately. We're working with...
Yeah, we're trying to figure that out. And also, I know the first time we uploaded last week's episode, there was an audio glitch. We fixed it. Hopefully, you heard the corrected version in time.
We're doing our best.
We're doing what we can,
people. Just two idiots trying to do a thing.
Where do we find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Jess Blumke. Again, I'm going to be in Minneapolis this coming Saturday, the 5th or 6th or whatever the fuck it is. 6th. At Unleashed Hops and Hounds in Minneapolis. 100%
lied. It's the 3rd.
3rd is Saturday.
At least you are confident about it, you know? If you're going to be completely wrong,
at least
say it like
you know. I just read a story
about
a conservative Christian. The confidence seeps through.
It really absorbed into you. Saturday at 5 p.m., you do need reservations. Shoot us an email or a Facebook message if you're meeting us so we know to look out for you.
All right.
We're going to do a quick bonus episode, fast. We're going to talk about the show The Ultimatum.
Okay, and we will see you all next week. Have a good one.
Bye.